The Deadbolt Mystery Society presents The Warwick Recordings, a story about secrets and how they are uncovered in a strange neighborhood in an even stranger town.
Hello again. This is Knox Carter recording Warwick Tape number 2. I'm glad you're back. I was hoping you'd keep listening. Obviously, I must have said enough last time to make you want to know more about all of this. Good. You won't believe all the things I have to tell you. On the first tape, I told you about the journey that led me to move into a neighborhood called Warwick Court. When we last chatted, I promised to tell you about some of the secrets that I discovered in my house. And I'll get to that shortly. But first, let me tell you about Warwick Court itself. Neighborhoods, I would soon learn, were a lot like old houses and cheating wives. They could harbor secrets too. Warwick Court is one of the oldest neighborhoods in town. That description applies in more ways than one. You see, not only is Warwick Court filled with some of the oldest homes in Valley Falls, but it's also inhabited by an older population. I heard that the median age of Warwick Court residents is 72, but I don't know if that number has been scientifically calculated or not. I suspect it's more of a guess based on the fact that you can drive down any of the streets that make up Warwick Court without seeing a swing set, a bicycle, trampoline, basketball goal, or any of a dozen other things that would indicate the presence of children in any of the homes. What you will see in Warwick Court are vehicles with handicap tags, wheelchair ramps, immaculately tended lawns, medical alert signs posted on more than a few doors, bird feeders hanging from trees at every residence, and other signs that the neighborhood is filled with an aging population. It's not a dramatic thing, and certainly not something the casual observer would ever notice if driving through. Only when someone is deliberately looking would they spot the details and realize that no one below the age of 60 lives here. It was only after moving into Warwick Court that I really saw things for what they were. By then, of course, it was too late to do anything but live with the consequences of my rash decision. I never once thought to do any research into why the house was being sold or dig up any information on the previous owner. That's not normally the sort of thing you consider when buying a house. I bought the house at 84 Ramsey Street sight unseen. I had seen the pictures on the Realtor's website, of course, but I hadn't toured the location. Truth be told, I was hoping it had a lot of problems. Physical issues like faulty wiring, rotten wood, busted sheetrock, and the like were the sort of things I could remedy using my ingenuity and my own two hands. Those were problems I could wrap my head around and understand. Uncovering the root cause of a flooded basement is easy enough when you find the busted pipe and replace it. That's the kind of problem I wanted. Figuring out why you weren't good enough for your wife and why she felt she had to go elsewhere for affection was a much harder thing to determine. Those more elusive types of problems were the sort I wanted to avoid at all costs. I needed something I could fix and control and affect. The house on Ramsey Street had those sort of problems in droves. Although I didn't have to, I let my ex-wife have just about everything in the divorce. I didn't want the house, the furniture, or any of our stuff. All I wanted were those things that were just mine. My clothes, my computer, the money I kept in my special account, my guitars, my car, my tools, and my books. This made moving into the house on Ramsey Street a piece of cake. To begin with, I bought a new mattress and some bedding, a few things for the one bathroom that worked, and some building supplies. It only took me a few hours to officially settle in after I closed on the house and acquired the keys from the Realtor. Home sweet home it definitely was not, but it was mine. Although in the coming days I would feel imprisoned by the sheer amount of work I had ahead of me, in that moment, when I sat on the new mattress that still had the plastic on it and I took a deep breath of musty air that was probably saturated with mold spores, I felt free. For the first time since the divorce proceedings began, I felt like I had a chance to start fresh. Motivated by a life filled with new opportunities, I decided to start on a small project to mark my first day in my new place. Putting up a new mailbox seemed like an easy enough thing to do. It was also necessary, since the old one had been knocked over at some point and never replaced. I'd already submitted my change of address form with the post office, and I didn't want to miss any mail simply because I didn't have a box. I needed my royalty checks to come to the right place. Eager to get the first of many tasks completed, I grabbed a few tools in the mailbox and I headed out to the curb. The old mailbox post was still there, so I simply needed to attach the new mailbox to it. It was a simple 10-minute job that would seem like a monumental accomplishment after all that I'd been through this year. It should be noted that whenever I think a job will take 10 minutes, it usually translates into an hour at the very least. I always forget a tool or two, and then I have to spend half an hour searching for what I need to do the job. This was especially true since I had no idea where any of my tools were. Eventually, I located everything I needed to replace the mailbox, and I set about to finish the task. I was just about finished tightening the last bolt when a shadow passed over me. I looked up to see the radiant, smiling face of an older woman who must have been at least 70. She was extending a glass of lemonade to me. I jumped and said a curse word as her unexpected presence startled me. I followed that up by profusely apologizing for my language. The lady seemed oblivious to any of that. I'll recount our conversation as best I can. "Well, hello there, neighbor," the woman said. "I saw you out here and thought I'd come over and meet you. You look like you were thirsty, too. I haven't met anyone who could resist my lemonade. I squeeze it fresh." "That's very kind of you," I replied. "I'm a sucker for a cold glass of lemonade. Sorry again about my reaction." "Oh, don't you worry about that," she said. "I guess I did kind of sneak up on you, although that wasn't my intent. You just moved in, didn't you?" "Yes, ma'am. I just bought this house. I'm Knox Carter," I explained. "So nice to meet you. It's good to be welcomed to the neighborhood by a smiling face." "Oh, I'm just happy to have a neighbor again." "I'm Virginia, by the way, Virginia Barker. I live in the house next door." "I'm so glad somebody finally bought this house. It has sat empty far too long." "I have a lot of work to do on it," I admitted. "It's kind of a mess." "Oh, I'm not surprised," Virginia said. "The people who lived here before were kind of a mess, too. If you think the outside of the house is bad, you should see the inside," I said with a laugh. "But I'm excited to tackle the project." "Is it just you?" Virginia asked. "Just me, I'm afraid," I answered. "Now I find that impossible to believe," Virginia said. "A good-looking young man like yourself should be having to beat the girls off with a stick. There's no girlfriend or anything?" "I'm divorced," I said. "No kids." "Oh, my stars, that's wonderful," she exclaimed. "Wait, I don't mean that in a way that it came out, dear. I just meant that I had the cutest niece I need to introduce you to." "Thanks," I said, "but I'm not sure I'm ready for that just yet. The divorce is still pretty fresh. That's the reason I moved out here. I needed a change of scenery." "Oh, of course," she replied. "I understand completely. But you seem like a nice enough young man, and those are hard to find these days. I worry about my Ellie. I want her to find someone nice. Times are scary out there. So many nut jobs running around. One is even killing young women. Did you hear about that murder across town last week where the girl was killed with a claw hammer? They said the killer left a poem behind. What kind of person would do something like that?" "Yes, it's terrible," I admitted. "The world has gone crazy. You never know what sort of sick people are out there." "No, you really don't, Mr. Carter," Virginia said. I worry about Ellie so much. Things are so much different than they were back in my day." "She's lucky to have you looking out for her," I responded. "Nonsense. It's what a good auntie does," Virginia assured me. "What do you do, Mr. Carter?" "Just call me Knox," I said. "Mister isn't necessary. As for what I do, I'm a writer. Novelist."
"Like Patricia Cornwell?" Virginia asked.
"Yes, but not nearly that successful," I explained. "I do okay, but instead of buying a summer house with my last royalty check, I bought a rundown death trap to renovate."
"Well, this is just about the most interesting thing I've heard all day," Virginia said, pleased. "We have a local celebrity in our midst. I'm pleased as punch about that. Oh, please tell me you're a mystery writer. I just love those mysteries that feature the cat detective. Oh, they're so much fun to read."
"No, ma'am, I haven't written a cat mystery,"
I said with a chuckle. But if my publisher wanted to give me an advance to write one, I'd put a cat in a trench coat so fast it would make your head spin. My novels have an element of mystery, but I would say most of them are thrillers. Suspense, mostly.
Oh dear, that's wonderful, Virginia said. Our very own Stephen King. I'm sure your parents are so proud of you.
They are, I confirmed. They've always been very supportive. They aren't always crazy about the topics I chose to write about, but they know that I'm good at what I do. So you've killed people before, I would assume, she asked with a deadpan voice. Beg pardon? I said. In your books, of course, Virginia said with a laugh. Oh, yes, quite a few times, actually, I said, laughing along with her. You'd be amazed how therapeutic it is when there's someone you want to take revenge on. It's so easy to do in the pages of a book. It's also completely legal. But don't worry, none of my characters have ever killed anyone with a claw hammer. Is there anyone you would like me to kill for you, Miss Barker? Oh, Mr. Carter, you're quite the card, Virginia said, patting me playfully on the arm. Maybe I shouldn't introduce you to Ellie after all. You might be a corrupting influence. You're not the first to say such a thing, Miss Barker, I admitted. My parents thought the same. Apparently, I convinced my younger brother to do a lot of things that got him into trouble. How do your parents feel about the divorce and their son being all alone? She asked. They're fine with it, I explained. My ex-wife cheated on me, so they think I'm better off without her. The solitude thing sort of goes with being a writer. I told them I needed the quiet to write my next novel. Do you mind me asking what the new novel is about? She asked. I only have a vague idea at this point, I admitted. I have a working title. That's about it at the moment. I'll probably write about a house with a lot of skeletons in the closet. I'll model it after this house I just bought and come up with some really deep, dark secrets to expose.
Oh, I like that. Very mysterious, Virginia said. Did I tell you that my niece is a voracious reader? She devours horror novels like candy. I think she would probably like what you write, too.
Well, enough about all that. I can see that you're quite busy, Mr. Carter. Knox. I'll let you get back to it. Maybe I could cook dinner for you one day soon. Think of that as my way of welcoming you to the neighborhood. I haven't had anyone to cook for since my husband Harold passed away earlier this year.
I'm sorry to hear that about your husband, I said.
Thank you. It was very sudden, Virginia explained. I'm doing my best to move forward. Now, what do you say to that dinner I was talking about?
Dinner sounds amazing, I said, meaning it. I haven't had a home-cooked meal in ages. I make a mean pot roast.
Maybe I'll make cheesecake for dessert.
My mouth is watering, I said.
Who knows, Virginia said. I can invite a few friends from the neighborhood. It could give you a chance to meet folks.
Including your niece, of course, I said with a wry smile.
Virginia winked.
Of course.
Why do I get the feeling I'll end up meeting Ellie no matter what? I asked.
You never know what could happen, Mr. Carter, Virginia reminded me.
Please, call me Knox, I said.
Right, Knox. Would tomorrow night at 7 work for you? Virginia asked.
I think I could get everything together by then.
My schedule is free, I said. I appreciate your hospitality.
Oh, think nothing of it, dear, Virginia said. I have some selfish motives for all of this. Now, I'll let you get back to it. I have a dinner party to plan.
Thanks for the lemonade, Miss Barker. And for the dinner invitation. I'll look forward to it.
Oh, please, call me Virginia. I'll talk to you soon. In the meantime, if there's anything you need, don't hesitate to ask. I'm happy to help you get acquainted with the neighborhood.
Thanks so much. I appreciate that, truly.
And that was my introduction to Miss Virginia Barker. As far as neighbors went, she seemed okay. She had a grandmotherly charm about her that made me feel like moving to Warwick Court was the right move. She seemed like the kind lady who bakes cookies and watches old reruns of The Waltons. Wholesome was a word I would have used to describe her. The thing about meeting her niece made me a little nervous, primarily because I wasn't interested in dating anyone at the moment, and she seemed determined, but I would worry about that tomorrow. After tightening a few screws and the final step of the process, the mailbox was installed. I surveyed my handiwork with pride. It was a ridiculous thing to be proud of, but it was the first thing I had done as a bachelor. Armed with an extra dose of confidence, I decided to go and do a little more work inside the house before dinner. Since I already had a working bathroom, I thought I would start with the master bedroom. The sooner I got it fixed up, the sooner the place would seem like a home. The bedroom would double as my office. Or at least it would until I had time to complete more of the renovations on my list. I wasn't really sure what the reason was for the poor shape of the house. It was like the previous owner had just gone crazy and done his best to destroy everything with his bare hands. At the time I made the offer, I didn't really care what the reason was. The fact that the house was a wreck meant that I got it for a steal. The bank just wanted to unload the property and get some of their money back. Good for them, really good for me. I should have been more cautious. I should have done a little digging on the house and the people who owned it. I should have done my homework. It cost me in the long run, but I'll get to that soon enough. There were holes in the sheetrock. Some of the spindles on the banister leading to the second floor were snapped in half like toothpicks. The carpet had been pulled back in some of the rooms, and the rooms that weren't carpeted had huge scratches on the hardwood. It was like the place had been ransacked, and whoever did it was looking for something. Most of the walls were in desperate need of paint. For those rooms that weren't painted, wallpaper hung precariously from the walls, threatening to peel away entirely and fall to the floor in a moldy heap. Most of the windows had at least one cracked pane, and some of them were missing all their panes entirely. The yard was an overgrown mess, populated with weeds and thorn bushes and thistles. The roof needed to be replaced, and on and on. "Buy a fixer-upper," they said. "It'll be fun," they said. I muttered under my breath as I grabbed a framing hammer and went into the master bedroom with the intent of ripping out the sheetrock down to the studs. All of the walls were damaged in some way, and it seemed easier to just replace all the drywall first. Besides, if there were any electrical issues, tearing out the sheetrock would give me a look at all that. But the wiring wasn't what got my attention when I hit the drywall with my hammer, knocking out a huge chunk of sheetrock and exposing what was beneath. At first, I wasn't sure exactly what I was seeing, so I hit the wall with my hammer again, and then started pulling the sheetrock away from the studs in huge, dusty chunks. A large, spray-painted eye looked out at me, joined by what looked like a series of rules. The eye was a blazing orange that looked like a burning sun in the gloom that was my bedroom. In my mind, it could have conceivably come from one of Sauron's relatives. It was painted in a graffiti style that made it seem like it would have looked at home on an overpass or a water tower. I felt like the eye was looking at me. The text painted below the eye read as follows. 1. The owner of this house is always considered the target. 2. Assume you're always being watched. 3. You are now the prey. 4. They will try to kill you. 5. Suspect everyone. 6. Do some research on Stone Gardener. 7. The Owl King is coming. Although I knew I was completely sane at that point and that my eyes weren't deceiving me, seeing so much strangeness in front of me reminded me of some of the things I had seen and heard in Saturn Hills. It was a hospital where I had spent some time several years back, but I hadn't had any problems like that in nearly a decade. Whoever wrote those rules and painted that eye probably needed to start taking their meds. But I'll get to that soon. The batteries on my recorder are getting low, so this seems like a good stopping point for now. If you come back and listen to the next installment, I'll tell you another one of my secrets. I think you'll find it interesting. Until next time, this is Knox Carter with the Warwick Recordings.
The Warwick Recordings are presented by the Deadbolt Mystery Society. Written by Jason Brannan. Edited by David Alderman. Narrated by Glenn Payne. Sound designed and mixed by Glenn Payne. Executive producers Jason Brannan and Sean Brannan. You can support us by reviewing the Warwick Recordings on the platform where you found us and by sharing this podcast with others. If you enjoyed the Warwick Recordings, we think you would also like our puzzle-solving mystery games, which are found at deadboltmysterysociety.com. Thank you for listening. Until next time.